I am live in Sinclair, Wyoming, just down I-80, where this big pileup happened. I suppose it happened Thursday. I'm not sure, Thursday, or I guess Thursday afternoon sometime. And I saw the story. It never occurred to me that I was going to be going through there. But what has happened is that I am held up because they closed I-80 for a long time from where I am, kind of down in a valley, and I'll talk more about it in a second. That's a little bit further up on the mountain, and there were 70-some cars piled up there, and I guess it was an accident investigation zone. And so I am stuck at a truck stop. And as I speak, they have opened the highway, but checking the cams and conditions doesn't look too good. So I've been sitting here listening to music with the PA system that I brought and chilling in the mobile podcast command unit. And it's been great. I've been having a good time. And at first, you know, it's my Friday, Saturday, basically. And I thought, well, I'm not going to do a podcast today because usually I don't. And now I thought, well, this is a perfect podcast for a Saturday as we deal with some heavy weather out west in podcast 356. And of course, this podcast is sponsored by xgovernmentcars.com. Well, Ed Johnson, as you know, is responsible for Podcast Mobile Command Unit 8, because it was Ed who originally suggested, when I said I want to get a van, even though my son was like, don't get a creeper van, that's what that's going to be. My son said, don't get a creeper van, and Ed was like, get an ambulance, it's a lot cheaper, and of course procured this ambulance and then guided me through the process. And I can't say enough about Ed Johnson and xgovernmentcars.com. They have nicer, newer vehicles now because Ed's managed to get some better sources. So they have Chargers, Impalas, next gen Fords, which is the police Ford sedan, which is great, the new one, trucks, vans, SUVs, Expeditions, and so forth. And here's the key: great financing for all levels of credit, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Everybody gets approved at xgovernmentcars.com. Xgovernment Cars only carries one owner, professionally maintained government and fleet vehicles. I've had now four of them, and they're great. And the thing is, a lot of people are selling Crown Vicks or Chargers, but you really just don't know what you're getting at other dealers that don't specialize in this. And Ed has been doing this since, well, I don't know, 2004 or 5 at least. Cash deals direct from owner Ed Johnson, a 3-day satisfaction guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, you take it back. Financing for all levels of credit, and you can apply safely and securely online 24/7 at xgovernmentcars.com. Or you can just visit and see what they've got out there, especially now that the weather's getting better in Minnesota. 2420 Nevada Avenue South. Oops. 2420 Nevada Avenue North. It's north in Golden Valley, Minnesota. And don't forget, the grand reopening event is on now. Everything is better at
xgovernmentcars.com.
So as I speak, they've opened the highway, and I've been checking the cams along the highway, and conditions do not look good for the podcast ambulance. When I pulled in here this afternoon, there were literally hundreds of semis because they closed the road, and this was the last exit. And the thing is, people will drive until they're forced to get off, because you never know. Sometimes it's open, but when I pulled in, there were literally hundreds of semis and a few RVs, but not as many RVs as I've been seeing down south. And the truth be told, this is the route that I wanted to avoid. I should have gone Las Vegas, Joe Tashita, I should have stopped at your house. And I should have gone the Vegas route, because this little weather system is right up in these mountains and it's causing all kinds of problems. The problem is, east of Rawlins, Wyoming, is kind of a valley, and then you go up from here to higher elevation. And I assume that I, as I said, am heading into these higher elevations, and up there the temperatures are hovering around freezing. So we're talking about Laramie and Cheyenne, and that does not bode well for the podcast ambulance. So I'm hanging at the truck stop. There's so many trucks and so many people trying to get on Wi-Fi, I can't even get on the Wi-Fi. I'm going to have to made some friends inside, and hopefully we can straighten this out. The thing is, even when I go to the truck stop, everyone is trying to access. So, you know, if I take the computer into the truck stop, it's still impossible to get online because everybody's trying to get on. So as some of these trucks are leaving, maybe the Wi-Fi will open up a little bit and I can get some more information as well as post this podcast. So when I pulled in this afternoon, I took a nap for 3 or 4 hours With the diesel running, it was great, toasty, warm. It's so great. This thing is, it's like a little cabin. It's fantastic. And it is well after midnight, my time now, and I'm just raring to go. I made a pot of coffee and I drank it. I fueled up. It was funny, great conversation with somebody about fuel. And I said, do you guys have enough diesel left? And he was like, well, when all these trucks get ready to roll, my advice is go ahead and fuel up now. This is about an hour and a half ago. So the great thing about diesel is when you let it idle, it doesn't use hardly any fuel. So I'm just letting this thing run. And just so you can hear it, because I love the sound, I'm just letting this diesel run. And there's trucks all over the place. So they're starting to leave a little bit. I have to look out the window and just see how many. There's still a lot of trucks here, but many of them are taking off. So I'm going to open up a little sliding window. I've turned off the exhaust fan, so I think I should open this up so I don't asphyxiate myself while I'm talking. And I've got some pretty powerful exhaust fans in here that I'm not going to turn on because they're way too loud. Sounds like, well, I'll show you what it sounds like. Yeah, I'm not doing a podcast with that. So what I'm going to do is open up this. Now, earlier they were coming and going and leaving and making lots of truck noises. So I'm going to open up that outside window. And the microphone is facing the outside window, that little sliding window. So hopefully you can hear some trucks coming and going. Meanwhile, I'll get some fresh air in here. So why do a podcast right now, aside from the fact that I'm bored to tears and I don't feel like sleeping? It's time. I just felt that it was time to talk about a couple of things that that I think are very interesting from this trip. What was I going to say? Oh, yeah. When at some point here, a little earlier, the road was closed, and it was really funny because all the truckers were standing around the front door of the truck stop, just hopping around like they were really ready to go. And the place was full for a while, and as soon as they opened 80, they've opened it just east of here, just so that it's up and running east, and I don't know how far it goes. And honestly, I looked at the cams, and I was like, I don't think I want to drive on that yet. Let the trucks go up there. And the place was chock full for a while. And this isn't one of those really nice truck stops. I went to this place called Little America, which is west of here, a couple of hundred miles, and it's like a hotel. It's beautiful up there. This is not that kind of place. I mean, it's fully functional. It's not a crappy, horrible place. It's a fully functional truck stop. It's nice, but there were a lot of drivers in here and a lot of wayward travelers because we all had to get off the road. So this weather and backup from the pileup situation has been frustrating for a lot of reasons. One, this whole day was a day of detours. I ended up taking a 250-some detour, which meant I had to go up 100 miles, go across the Continental Divide, get about another 10 or 15 miles, and then turn and come back down another 100 or so miles and back across the Continental Divide to get 5 miles up the road from here in Rawlins, Wyoming, and then find out that I-80 was closed. So it's kind of funny. The truck stop at Little America, as I said, is like a hotel. This is a good place, and so I'm happy to be here, especially if I can get online. And earlier, it's funny because people were lined up in the bathrooms and they were all trying to make calls and you couldn't get online. And then it started snowing. And I mean, it's snowing really hard. And that was when I just rolled out and said, I'm going to sleep. So I slept for a few hours. And when I got up, the snow was gone. So the conundrum now, as I said, is whether to risk the black ice and continue down the road or wait until morning. Supposedly, they're predicting more snow, quote, up there. And this is what the locals are calling it tomorrow or tonight, 6 to 11 inches. And I basically don't want to get caught in that. It's funny because this is just a short stretch of highway. This is maybe 100 miles between here and Cheyenne, 150, 200 miles at the most. But it could be 200 miles of hell. So I'll do a podcast and revisit the road situation a little bit later. So a couple of words in this podcast, actually more than a couple, about the Donner Party, because the Donner Reed migration has been with me all day, not the least reason for which is the weather conditions and the situation that I'm having. And I have to make a couple corrections. First of all, at one point, I've been talking about the Donner Party like for three podcasts. And at one point, it's really interesting when you're on this kind of a trip this long, you forget where you were. And, you know, people always say, that they did. They, when people do shows on the road, they always talk about not sure where they are and where they've been. It all kind of winds together. It kind of all comes together in sort of a mass, and you forget which day you did what. You kind of remember where you were, but you forget which day. So it's important that I get this stuff down. First of all, the Donner Reed Party left Missouri in 1845 or 46, not 1866. And I read 1866, and I don't know why they would have put that there, because 1866 would have made a big difference for these people. The whole story is this was a party of immigrants who came from Missouri to come to California to seek their fortunes because they just wanted a better life. And as the guy I interviewed at the museum in Calistoga, California said, they were a cross-section of America. So it wasn't Tom Joad. It was a migration of people who were just regular, everyday Americans of all walks of life who wanted to make their lives better. And this is why they came out here. And somewhere along the line, they ran into this guy named Lansford Hastings, or read a pamphlet that Lansford Hastings had written, which made the suggestion of a cutoff or shortcut to save 400 miles, which, by the way, if it had worked, would have meant months for these people, but it didn't. And the story of the Donner Reed Party is the story of a series of mistakes which were made, the first of which was to take this cutoff. Now, I've read varying reports, as all things with history, I guess I'm going to end up having to study several books. You can actually read the Donner family documents and things of that nature. I'm not going to do that, but there are several books, new and old, being written. In fact, some guy on Twitter just followed me, and I should go look, but I can't get online. I'd have to use my phone, who actually just finished a book on the Donner Party. Anyway, maybe I'll interview him at some point. Some reports say that Lansford Hastings never made this trip, and I've reported that, but I just read that others say he made the trip in a wagon train previously with no trouble, although it was quite difficult. The suggested shortcut led across the Great Salt Lake, which I came across either today or yesterday. I don't remember. And I'll tell you, it was today. It's really something, the Salt Lake. If you've ever seen it, it's amazing. Now, I wouldn't even want to think about traveling across that expanse of salt in a car, let alone in a wagon with children and families and everything else. There is no water. It's all salt water and no living thing out there. You're just basically across in a wagon. And I have a limited understanding of the Salt Lake, but apparently during the summer it hardens up. And it's like concrete in various places, except that's not what happened for the Donner Reed Party. The wheels of the wagons were too heavy and sunk down in the mud beneath the hard-packed salt, making travel difficult. Now, these wheels were great. The tires, as they called them, were great for coming across the plain. But when they got onto the salt flats, those thin wheels sunk down in it, and there's a crust of salt which is hard, and once you break through that, it's mud. And so the idea was to basically lighten the wagons, and they threw all sorts of things out to deal with the weight issue. I told the story in one of the other podcasts, I think, which I read on a plaque at the museum in Calistoga, which talked of a blanket filled with $10,000, a fortune in those days, being thrown out. Or that little comment will be in the piece that I'll throw in at the end of this podcast. They still find pieces of Donner Party wagons and flotsam in the salt flats. So it was a pretty major thing. And now, a couple of things to point out. Not everybody took the cutoff. They kind of split. First, the Donner Party pushed off late from Missouri. And some historians don't feel that that made much of a difference, but they were late. Second, they made the decision, a collective Democratic decision, which I've talked about, to take the cutoff, even though they were advised in an odd fashion by this Lansford Hastings not to. What had happened was they found a note in pieces, which was written by Lansford Hastings. One of the women in the Donner Party painstakingly stitched back the note together. They stitched it back together, and it told them, do not take the cutoff. Now, this produced a huge amount of disagreement and fighting amongst this group. It's later on in here, but there were something like 87 people in the party, maybe a little bit more originally, and they had a big fight about whether or not to take the cutoff. And as I mentioned, the women were not allowed to vote, but there was one woman who was a school teacher who was quite adamant that they should not do it. She was outvoted because she couldn't vote, and it was a Democratic vote. And my sense is that they really didn't know what they were doing. They were following Lansford Hastings' advice. He was quite a colorful writer and absolutely convinced of his ideas, which turned out to not be such very good ideas. They couldn't possibly have known. This is 1846, just 15 years before it was the era of the Mountain Men, you know, Jim Bridger and others, who walked out there by themselves, and they were the first guys to sort of report back after Lewis and Clark about what it was like out there. So this is the whole Oregon versus California trail. The cutoff crossed the Wasatch Mountains and then skirted the Ruby Mountains in Nevada before joining up with the California Trail near Elko, Nevada, which is one of the places that I was. In fact, I was in all these places. And I can't imagine cutting a new trail with horses and oxen and cattle, women and children, especially people who really had little experience doing something like this, because it's hard enough to drive it. Hastings underestimated the unproven trail and the weather conditions of the West, some of which I'm dealing with right now. And it's no joke. I mean, I'm sitting in a truck stop doing podcasts precisely because I don't want to take the chance of getting killed up on that road at this point. I'll probably wait until light and maybe when the temperature goes up a little bit. As I said, 87 people in the Donna Reed party, 80 miles across the salt desert. Many oxen pulling the wagons died, as did many of the cattle. I also read that the rest of the cattle were supposedly stolen by Indians. Probably the third big mistake was that they thought they had the cattle, because the cattle were, you know, this thing was spread. This train, 87 people, I don't know how many wagons, spread out across this desert, you know, hell-bent for leather to get across this thing. And I don't know whether it was the salt desert or another desert in another passing. But in parts of Nevada, it's an alkali desert, right? And I read in one book, and I don't remember which one, the idea was you could cross it, but you had to go like hell, and you had to get across, and you crossed at night. And if you got caught too far into the day, you were in trouble. Now, I don't know if that was a salt lake, but they had to have crossed it in the summer, so it couldn't have been very pleasant. So now they were weeks behind schedule. They lost the cattle. They didn't know they had lost the cattle, so they thought they had the cattle, and they now had to cross the Sierra Nevadas. Seeing them here again, seeing the Sierra Nevadas, I cannot imagine crossing the Sierra Nevadas. It's hard enough in a car. I mentioned this in a couple podcasts. I had some ridiculously difficult, drives through that region. And I'm not driving a car. You know, I'm driving a big truck. But I mean, you know, I didn't even have time to put my seatbelt on at one point because these roads were just, they demanded 100% of your attention. And I realized that wagons and horses are a lot slower, but I can't imagine. I think it was Robert Louis Stevenson wrote a story about 25 years later, in 1890, the stagecoach drivers struggling down those mountain roads, and one of the horses fell, and there's a whole piece in his book about how they just rolled right over the horse and kept going. The one that they had a release so that when the thing fell, they could release the reins and the bonds that held the horse on the little fork that the horses pulled the wagon with, and when one fell, they cut it loose. And he talked about how expertly this guy cut the horse loose and just went right over the top of him and kept on going, because not to would have been to tumble down the side of the mountain. This was with the road already cut, so you can imagine what it was like with no road. They had to pick their way down this hill. It's just unbelievable. So they made it to what is now, I assume, called Donner Lake because of them. And then it began to snow, and they had to basically hunker down. And this is when they discovered they didn't have the cattle. They divided into two groups, one at Donner Lake, one at Alder Creek Valley. One group, or some of the groups, apparently sent out a group of 15 with snow, you know, they made snowshoes to try to get help. The group that had not taken the shortcut found out that this was going on and sent people out to help. But by then, it was April, and it was all over with. Out of 87 in the party, 48 survived and made it to California. New research suggests they ate the family dogs and other animal meat, bones, hides, twigs, and string. They have not discovered any human bones in the stuff that they've sort of sifted through. But the thing is, This is what gives the Donner Party historical traction, is this idea that they may have resorted to eating those who had died. And I know of at least one person who did admit to cannibalism, which, as an aside, you know, eating human beings is a terrible thing, right? I can't imagine it. We have a natural, I assume we have a natural inclination against cannibalism, although there are primitive groups that are cannibals. And the only time human beings generally resort to cannibalism is in extreme situations. And as I mentioned, I'm reminded of the movie Alive and the book Alive, which is phenomenal. If you've never read it, the story about the soccer players who got trapped in a car in an airplane crash that had to resort to cannibalism, and you know, they struggle with it for the rest of their lives. And the other thing is that the Calistoga Museum, Al Derrick, the guy I interviewed there, said in another podcast that this is something that's debated around Calistoga and places the Donna Reed survivors actually settled. It's not funny, you know. It's something that they kind of don't talk about there. You can make little jokes about it, but, you know, we made a lot more jokes on Facebook about it, but it's not something that they joke too much about around there, because that's, you know, Tucker and Reed and some of the others settled there, and they have relatives and descendants there. The good news is that the area where they finally ended up is really God's country, and they deserved such a place after what they went through. So that is the short form of the Donner story. I'm sure I got some pieces wrong. I've been fascinated with that story for many years. I knew about it when I was growing up, but I first read about it in Men to Match My Mountains, I think by Irving Stone. And it brought it all back, and I'm essentially, you know, surprised to be traveling their path in reverse, at least until I get to Laramie, if I ever do. And from the Donner Pass, this is the final thought about the whole thing, recorded the day before yesterday. Stepping out of the vehicle, dismounting the vehicle at just below, about 500 to 1,000 feet below Donner Pass, which is at 7,200 some feet in the Sierra Nevadas. The thing that's just the overwhelming is these people came over this pass without any roads. And I don't know how they did it. And I don't know how they did it in order to later go into that Napa Valley and survive and thrive. It's really amazing. Amazing. It's an amazing story. And I guess the final point that I would make is that, you know, look what they sacrificed to achieve something. And I'm sure they didn't intend that. I'm sure that was not the intention. But let me tell you, from the moment that they set out from wherever they set out from, Missouri or Illinois or wherever it was, as the guy said at the museum, they were a cross-section of the American public. And at the time, they were just normal people who did this amazing thing, because once the hook was set and they were coming out here, they were certainly, when they got up here, they weren't going to turn around. I mean, turning around would have been worse than going forward. So it's amazing what people will do, just average human beings will do. Were they above average? And they were a cross-section of America. They were looking for opportunity. But what they did was truly amazing, and the sacrifice they made was overwhelming, because obviously not only did they lose relatives, but they ended up eating them. And you can imagine the acrimony and the emotional strife, the trauma that went with that. I think the thing that's fascinating about it is that they, you know, they made an honest mistake. They kept making mistakes, thinking that they were doing the right thing. And that's the lesson for all of us with these kinds of disasters. And like I said in the other podcast, you know, that was the latest technology at the time. One of the gifts that they gave us was the idea that one could actually come through this area and settle, build railroads and towns. That's pretty amazing.
Well, I want to say once again thanks to xgovernmentcars.com for sponsoring the Bob Davis podcast. Don't forget that the grand reopening event is on. You know, Ed went through that whole thing with deciding whether he was going to move or not, and essentially closed it down for the holidays and then reopened. And so that's what's going on, the grand reopening event, and they bought the building. So X Government Cars is not going anywhere. 2420 Nevada Avenue North. They've got a great selection of really nice cars now, because Ed's got some great sources. Crown Vics, Impalas, the Dodge Chargers, which are really cool. I see these all over the place. And of course, the new Ford Police sedan, which is really an awesome car. I saw one today that was new in someplace in Wyoming that was tricked out with these really big tires, a police car. And man, it was like, I gotta have one of those. That's what I'm gonna... They were fat tires on it, and it looks really awesome. So thanks to those guys for sponsoring the Bob Davis podcast. And yes, let me get on the PA. Let me grab the PA here. Ooh. Hang on.
xgovernmentcars.com.
And thanks to the digital sponsor of the Bob Davis podcast, Mad K Studios, specializing in quality original automotive artwork. Check out what they do. That link takes you to Mad K Studios' Facebook page, and they're going to be at all the big car shows coming up, and I'll tell you more about that as we get on into the late spring weeks, which I'm really looking forward to after all this snow up here in Wyoming. Thank you for listening on Stitcher.com, iTunes, or TuneIn. Thanks for liking, sharing, and favoriting, and following on Facebook and Twitter, and thanks for your donations at thebobdavispodcast.com. They are keeping the heat on as we speak, because I am burning diesel fuel, even if it's just sipping, because it's idling. I'm probably going to run this most of the night until I get good and hot, and then I'll turn it off and take a little nap. And I also want to say thanks for the speaking inquiries. I'm getting inquiries again about speaking, and looking forward to doing more of that. I will be at the SD48 Shindig at Chanhassen Dinner Theater on April 25th. Just follow the link on the BobDavisPodcast.com, which I'll post with the podcast if you want to know more about that. All right. Now it is time to go back to the truck stop and find out what's up with the roads and see if I can finally get on Wi-Fi. Thanks for listening to Podcast 356. Have a great weekend.
Is it open?
Yeah.
It is.
There's black ice everywhere.
Black ice everywhere?
Yeah.
Just, I don't think...
Just on the bridge, isn't it?
Well, I don't know about that.
What
so
is
conditions
that?
Are not good.
Know,
this is my recorder.
Is
this is my recorder.
Oh.
I'm just recording. So the conditions are not good.
It's just black ice.
Yeah, it's just black ice.
Oh, my God. So.
Oh, good.